You're listening to the Flip Houses Like a Girl podcast, where we educate, empower, and celebrate everyday women who are facing their fears, juggling family and business, embracing their awesomeness, and wholeheartedly chasing their dream of flipping houses. Each episode delivers honest-to-goodness tools, tips, and strategies you can implement today to get closer to your first or next successful house flip. Here's your spiky-haired, breakfast taco-loving host, house flipping coach, Debbie DeBeery.
Hey there. Thanks for hanging out with us today. So in this conversation, I'm introducing you to one of our super fun flip sisters out of San Antonio, Texas, named Melissa. Her story is, it's so good. I know, every time I say it, but they all are. Maybe I should say, and they all are. So the things that stand out for me in this conversation are how we get to choose our hards. And her choosing this as her hard has been way more rewarding than her 9-to-5 hard was that she no longer works at. Also, she learned some things that I think are really important lessons that we hear often from our guests. One is she learned how to take calculated risks so that she could follow her dream. This dream of flipping houses. She learned how to ask for help and how that doesn't mean you're weak or failing or not good enough, and how to have hard conversations. Another thing we talk about is what she wants her daughter to see and what she wants her daughter to think is possible for herself. We talk about how pride can come into play when we're pricing our properties to sell. We talk about the importance of one of my favorite things to talk about, buffers. If you're in the program, you know we talk about buffers a lot. She talks about how crucial they are. They aren't just there to be annoying. Buffers are crucial. All right, we talk about all kinds of things. She's walking us through her first flip, how she found it, how she financed it, all the things that came up, all the things she learned, all the things she might do differently, and everything else that comes up in the next 45, 50-ish minutes. All right, without further delay, let's get into this conversation with Melissa. You know the drill. You want to just start with introducing yourself and letting us know who you are, where you are, and what you're up to in the world. Like what are you doing these days besides flipping houses?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, thank you for having me. When I first started learning about your group and I was listening to the podcast and joined the program, I said, this is my goal, is to be on a podcast.
You're here. Oh my God.
So the fact that it's happening is just such a dream come true. So thank you so much for having me. My name's Melissa, and I was in the corporate world for a long time, and my daughter was born during the pandemic. So I worked for a year after that, and then I really decided to just kind of shift my priorities a little bit during that time. And I've just found myself not being as present as I really wanted to be. And so my dad was actually flipping houses on the side. He had a full-time job and he was just doing it on the side. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to just help him a little bit. And then I realized that I really enjoyed it. And my husband came across your podcast and I fell in love with it. And just listening to all of the women's stories inspired me. And I was like, I can do this. Yeah. So it just really showed me that, I wanted to do this on my own and not have, you know, the safety blanket of my dad. I was like, I want to jump in on this. And my husband was on board. And so we jumped in to do it together. And that's, how we got through our first flip.
That's awesome. What did your dad have to say after you sold your first one? recently?
I think he was really proud. He was like, okay, you did it. You did it, you know? And so it was a cool moment, you know, to be able to take some of the things that I learned from him and everything I've learned from the program and really see it through to the end.
Okay. So let's talk about your first flip, because it was a doozy, meaning you learned a lot.
I did.
Yeah. We all have those learn a lot flips. So let's talk about, when did you buy it? When did you close on it, on the purchase?
Yeah. So we closed on it July of 2022.
Okay. And how did you find it?
I found this one through the MLS. And so I utilized the Go criteria that we learned through the program and found this one in a really great area. I found that it was like less than 10 minutes from a lot of different landmarks in the area. And so it just felt like a really great location that was desirable. So we went for it when we saw it on there.
Was it a new listing?
It actually was. My focus was originally on older listings, but I still had notifications set up for my desired zip codes.
Yep.
So this one popped up and it hadn't been on the market for very long. And so I jumped on it. It was, you know, at a time when the market was pretty hot. And so we had to move really quickly on it. But I fell in love with it the minute I saw it. I was like, it was a 1922 house. And so the bones were just so cute.
Yeah. It's
and
really
so I saw it and I was like, wow, this is a no-brainer for me.
Mm-hmm. Were there multiple offers or did you beat everybody and they decided quickly?
Yeah, I think we got to the punch and they decided quickly.
Nice. Nice. Yes. Okay. July 2022. What did you pay for the purchase?
So it was originally listed at $225 and we offered $183.5 and got it at that.
You offered $183.5 because that's what your number said. And they were brand new, fresh on the market and they accepted your offer.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, just make your offer, people. That's the lesson.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I think you followed along on the group. I was hesitant to make offers and, you know, we had some realtors that we had talked to that were like, you know, we can't go around making such low offers. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, we found the most amazing real estate agent and she was go-getter, confident, had a lot of knowledge of the market and she went to bat for us always. And so it made me feel more confident in making those offers. And as you all always say in the group too, it's if you don't make any offers, there's just never going to be a yes. So you might as well just make offers. The worst that happens is a no. And so I'm just so glad that we started to really get more aggressive with making our offers. And that's how this one happened.
That's super impressive. When you initially came up with your renovation budget, what was that initially?
Yeah. So this one shifted quite a bit. So we originally had an estimate from our contractors at about $97,000.
Okay.
And what we ended up spending was about $113,000.
Okay.
And you know, there was a lot of factors that led to that and a lot of self-elected things too, because we wanted to make sure that we were really making it the best possible product in that particular neighborhood to match the comp. So for example, it was originally a 2-1 and in order to really make it competitive with the comps, we needed to make it a 3-2.
Oh.
But it was a small house. So we actually added a whole extension of a little over 200 square feet so that with the comps, it was comparable square footage wise and also for the bedrooms and bathrooms that we needed to make it more appealing to the buyers.
That's amazing. I don't think I realized y'all did an addition on your first flip.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else has done that on these interviews. So look at you, girl. Okay. So 117, you added on, you took a 2-1 and made it a 3-2. Super smart, obviously. And let's see, Were there any weird things that came up between going under contract and then closing on it?
No, there were no surprises. Everything actually was a really smooth transaction. So we didn't have any surprises for on the front end. We took it as is. So we fully expected to do a full gut on the property. So we didn't have anything that we weren't ready for, essentially.
How did you finance it?
Yeah. So we started telling people what we were doing, which I was hesitant to do because I wanted to make sure I did it right.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
But I was like, you know what? People love this stuff. They want to hear what we're doing. And so we just, you know, we started telling our friends and I started posting a little bit about the journey, and we had a few different friends just come out of nowhere and say that they were interested in investing with us. So that was just amazing and just such a blessing through this process. It made us so much more confident. We had one set of friends invest with us for the purchase of the home, and then another fund some of the renovations. And then we had some money saved up to just supplement whatever was remaining for the renovations. So it was really great terms. And it was just low maintenance, especially for the renovations. It was just such a smooth, and they were very silent investors, right? So they were like, take our money, do what you need to do and pay us back. And yeah. So
the best kind.
Yes. So it was great. It took that part of the process kind of out of the equation when, you know, that sometimes that can create a little extra pressure.
For sure. And like, honestly, just tell people what you're doing. Stop trying to do it secretly. I get it. Of course, we don't want to fail publicly. We don't. Like, that does not feel good. It doesn't sound like it would be fun. But had you not been posting about it, you wouldn't have even known that people would be interested in investing, and they wouldn't have made money.
Right.
Right. Exactly. You're giving that money to somebody. Might as well. Like, it's either a hard money lender, right? Or some lender, or it's somebody, you know, a private money lender. Might as well give it to somebody, you know.
Yeah. It honestly surprises you too, how many people have money that they're looking to invest. And oftentimes they don't know how they want to invest. They're just not sure what's going to give them the best return at a lower risk. And so for them to have an opportunity like this is just amazing, because they have a secured asset and they have the opportunity to invest and support their friends. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just such a win-win all around.
Totally. They cannot get that kind of return secured against real property. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. I didn't know that about your journey. I try to ask as few questions as possible until we get to the interview. And then I'm like, I have no idea. I know very little about your thing. I have no idea. I have no idea. Okay. We talked about the financing of it. Okay. So let's talk about where you're in it. Okay. You're in the project. And you're doing a 200 square foot addition from purchase to sale. How long was that?
From purchase to sale, it ended up being about a little over a nine month renovation. So it took us some time, and there was just a lot of scenarios that popped up in between that extended our time, but also a lot of learning lessons that came with that, that really showed me, okay, here's how I would do it in the future to avoid that.
Yes. Yes. So let's talk about some of those things.
Yeah. So the property had a structure in the backyard, and it was actually a pretty large structure, and it had plumbing in it, had a toilet in there. And because of the comps and the area, it just didn't make sense to spend the money to renovate it. And it was in really, really bad condition. I mean, the concrete was all cracked, and it was a big structure. And so we decided to demolish it. And we had planned for that and budgeted for that on the front end. But it ended up being a little bit more complex. Like, for example, there was extra layers of shingles, the foundation that it was on. We needed to do a lot of smoothing over of that to make it just presentable for the buyer and just kind of convert it into a car slab. We had to run on the extension in order to keep the vaulted ceilings. We had to run the air ducts underneath the house. And so those parts were actually on back order. So we had to wait for those. There was a few cracks in some of the glass. We decided to keep the original windows because it was actually a home that was in a conservation district. It would have been a whole situation to try to order custom windows for it.
Such a situation for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the windows, you know, in itself were actually in really decent condition. It was just the glass that we had to replace, but we ended up finding, you know, additional cracks in glasses that we didn't notice before. So that was an additional cost and time suck. So there was just like a lot of things. And I think I posted about this, but we had a big flooring.
Oh my God. That's all I remember is this flooring debacle. Yes.
Well, that's all I remember too. So that was fun. I loved the flooring situation. I learned so much.
Let's talk about the flooring situation.
Yeah. So we were so close to the end, and we were walking through the house and we noticed that the vinyl was starting to crack, and it wasn't cracking because, you know, it was floated, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't cracking on the seams. Like the floor was cracking like in the middle of pieces.
Oh gosh.
And so I was like, this doesn't look right. This isn't supposed to happen.
That's so crazy.
And, you know, I definitely learned a lot about the initial installation, what that should actually look like. But I definitely put trust in the people that were doing it. Sure. And thought, okay, they're doing the sub-level the way that they explained it. It made sense to me. And this was a good learning opportunity because when you're not sure, just ask for help. Like bring in other friends or experts that know and bring them in. And I think that that's something that I learned throughout this entire process is that it's okay to ask for help. It's not failing. It's not embarrassing. People want to help you that are in your life. And then there's plenty of experts out there that would be happy to help. And so, you know, in second thought, we should have asked for advice on, hey, can you stop by and just look at the subfloor and make sure everything's going well that they're doing? And so anyways, we brought in, we told our contractors, you know what, we're going to deal with this later. Let's finish out all of the other finishes, knowing that, you know, we would have to do some additional touch up. But at that point, the conversation wasn't going awesome with our contractors. They really didn't want to accept that, you know, it was an error on the front end. And we made the decision to just move forward with letting them finish all of the other things that needed to be finished because we were so close to the end. I mean, it was literally just final punch items. So we decided we're not going to have them continue to touch the floor. Let's just finish the other items. And then we're going to bring in our own people and we'll figure out everything else that comes along with it afterwards. Right. So we brought in, you know, a few experts, to look at the flooring. We pulled up some of the flooring and immediately through their expert eyes, they were able to say, hey, this subflooring was not done well. And we're going to have to pull up all of the flooring. It cannot be salvaged. We're going to have to redo the subflooring and install all brand new flooring. So that was like a $10,000 hit.
I know that one. I know that one. Unfortunately, I know that $10,000 redo the flooring hit. It does not feel good at all. God.
Yeah, it was, It definitely kept me up. I mean, I literally had multiple dreams about flooring and I was like, oh, this is my life now. But I'm like, this is actually so cool that I get to have dreams about flooring now and not like other stuff. Like, I personally enjoyed having those kinds of dreams and those like wake me up at night, you know?
That is so hilarious.
So I was like, you know, you get to choose your heart. And I kept on telling my husband, I was like, if I'm going to choose my heart, this is so much more exciting to me than any other hearts I've ever experienced.
Totally. I love it.
So we're going with it. It stinks, but we're going to go with it.
I love that.
So we, you know, my husband's aunt actually came through for us and she's amazing. I mean, she's been in the flooring industry forever. Oh, and wow. Now like we should have just gone with her to begin with. Right. But, you know, we were just trusting that, hey, let's use the sub just so that there's accountability. When you allow your contractors to utilize their sub, sometimes there's more accountability all around. But I think, you know, in retrospect, it's definitely always great to just do your checks and balances and figure out what truly is going to be the best option for your project and for your budget, right?
Yep, totally.
So, yeah, so we got it all fixed. I was able to find a flooring that matched because the original flooring that I had purchased was from a liquidation store. And so of course they were like, we discontinued.
Oh, God.
Why did y'all discontinue? And it had nothing to do with the product. Apparently they had been selling that product for like 4 years. And the owner even came and took a look and he was like, we've never had this issue with this floor. I promise you, we've never had this issue. And so that kind of confirmed to us, it wasn't the flooring, it was the subflooring. Yeah. So anyways, I was able to find a flooring that was almost exactly in color and actually ended up being a prettier flooring. Nice. So it worked out.
Nice.
It worked out and it was solidly done. And that's what was super important to me is that I delivered a really great product. I'm not going to deliver, you know, something that's broken or half done. And I mean, especially the flooring that would come back to, you know, bite me in the future.
Right. But like even that. If it's like something that, you know, is 6 years, it's like, well, yeah, it's probably going to bite somebody like in 6 years. No, I don't want to sleep. I don't want sleepless nights for 6 years waiting for the person, like just fix it.
Right. And that's part of what's most rewarding for this is knowing that you're creating a beautiful home for someone that's going to live in it. And that's so rewarding. So why would you want to create something that someone's going to have issues with, you know? So,
yeah, totally. Yeah. Were you told what the deal was with the subfloor? Like what they did wrong?
Yes.
And what was happening? What was the deal?
All three experts said the same thing. And so that's what I knew.
Oh, that's always nice.
Yes, that helped because I was like, okay, everyone's on the same page that this was the issue. So the house was interesting because the original owners, they did some DIY extensions, I think, and additions. And so there was like major gaps in some of the flooring. There was some flooring that was kind of rotting. And so everything was like at different levels. So when the subfloor was completed originally, I think there was just some money saving tactics that were trying to be put into place. And so it was like some areas it was feathered. Some areas had, just like wood laid out, right? Like planks laid out. And so it was just all uneven, I think. And so at the time it made sense what they were saying, but ultimately when you laid the floor on it, you can feel it and it started cracking because there was significant break points throughout the house and the transitions weren't level either. So we had to just, bring up the flooring in some areas when it was corrected, bring it up, and we were able to remove all of the makeshift transition. So it ended up being so much more beautiful at the end of the day and so much sturdier, you know, as sturdy as you can get with a Pier and Beam 1922 house.
I love Pier and Beam. I wish all houses were Pier and Beam.
It's so easy to fix things.
So much easier. Everything is so much easier.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really interesting. So did that come up this year or last year?
This year, because it was right towards the end.
Oh, yep. Okay. Okay. So it's the flooring debacle of 2023.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then what else? Were there some other things? I know that was the big main thing. Were there any other issues?
Not anything super crazy. We had a termite scare because, you know, we opened up one of the walls and there was some wood fully damaged by termite. And it was actually really cool. I had never seen an inactive termite colony structure before. So that was really cool, but it scared the living, you know, out of me. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, like, is there termite infestation somewhere else? But we had someone come out and check, and there wasn't. And actually, at the very end, there had been so much rain that we spotted like two or three termites in the living room, like live ones, at the very end after we got the new flooring. And I was like, what is happening?
I can't do this. I can't have this conversation with you right now, termite. I cannot do this with you right now. Read the room, buddy.
I was like, no, this isn't real. This is not real.
This is not real.
We had the company that does the pest control come out, and it was a termite inspector specifically for that. And so he came out and he did a full blown check, and he said, hey, I'm not seeing anything active. He's like, I think just because of the rain and the pyrum beam, they came through. It's like, I don't see anything. He's like, so you're good to go. And we're going to remove some of the moisture that is attracting them. So that was really, really good news. And so we paid for that, but it was worth it because it wasn't a bigger issue like we were expecting.
Yeah.
And another thing that came up, which was a good learning lesson, is on older houses, you know, there's often, the inspectors often request, the sewer line cameras to be run. That was really scary. I held my breath for that, but I didn't realize it was like $400, maybe more, to get that, just the camera run through. So there was no major issues with that. So that was a huge relief, but the inspector, you know, just was like, oh yeah, we need to do this. And I was like, I didn't know that this was a thing. So that was another thing. And then there was just, you know, just extra expenses. Like, we needed a few extra piers on the foundation that weren't originally accounted for. So it was like an extra $1,000. We needed, extra decking for the roof because there was a few rotted beams that we just wouldn't have seen until we pulled things back. So that's like an extra almost $1,000, you know, so it's just everything kind of adds up.
All those little extra $500, $800, $1,000 things, they add up. Yes.
Yeah. And so if it hadn't been for your process of creating several buffers, as we're doing the deal, I mean, I don't know where we would have been. That would have been really scary.
I know. All about the buffers.
Yeah. Yeah. The buffers are so important and there's a reason for them.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was so eager to find a property that we didn't even follow the full percentage return at the beginning. And so now, looking forward, I'm like, there's a reason for all of these numbers. And I know you say that to us all of the time.
She's actually trying to save us.
Yes.
From ourselves.
Yes. You actually know what you're doing. No.
Because I get it. I just want to be in a project too. Yeah. But if it's not going to be a profitable one.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a reason for all of it. And so honestly, you know, following the buffers, at least, even if we can stick to the original percentage on return at the beginning,
yeah,
really saved us. And now moving forward, I know I'm going to follow all of the criteria because there's a reason for it. And so many things come up that are just not expected. And even with a full gut project where we were accounting for all of the things, there was still things that come up that you just don't expect. And so if it hadn't been for the buffers, I mean, a $10,000 floor repair.
Oh God.
That's, if you don't have a buffer in place, like that can really, really put you in the red. So the fact that we were still in the green after all of those things that came up for us, it was awesome. It was awesome to be able to actually see that in action.
Yes. Such good points. So when you initially bought the property, what were you anticipating the ARV to be?
So we were anticipating it to be about 340. The market shifted during that time because it was a weird window. and then we were kind of seeing the ARV drop down to like 320, 325. So I was getting a little nervous about that. But we were hoping for 340, 349, around there. And after all of the expenses, we were like, okay, we really need it to be 349 at least.
When did you list it for sale? Wait, was that all the stuff with the renovation? Did we touch on everything?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so, you know, one thing I want to add is that it is so important to have everything in writing and be as detailed as possible with your contractors and subs. And so somehow we missed budgeting the kitchen backsplash, which was like one of my showpieces, right? In my kitchen. But like, wait, because so the way that it was budgeted or estimated was kind of in buckets. So it was like, okay, kitchen, this is the amount that it will be about, right? And so now I know, hey, we need to like really make sure we take the time and fully itemize every aspect so that nothing can be missed. So I made sure to really look back at the templates and adjust those so that, you know, on this next project, I don't miss something like that, because I just assumed that it was backsplashes included. Like that seems so standard to me. And our contractor's like, no, we didn't talk about backsplash. So, so that was like an additional $1,400 that, you know, so there was just so many money learning experiences we had, that I'm really thankful for, because it's going to make me so much better on the next one. And it was, I mean, it was worth it. That $1,400, the tile turned out so awesome. I mean, I went extra with the tile. So,
so cute. That house. So cute. You just knocked it out of the park. It's so freaking cute.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's very charming. You did such an awesome job. That's definitely your lane, doing the design stuff. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
When did you list it for sale?
So we listed it for sale in April.
Okay.
And we listed it for sale on April 2nd. And it went under contract April 5th. So that was really exciting. And when we listed it, so we were going to list it at the 349. And we, a couple of days before, we went and toured some comps of houses for sale in the area just to kind of see, you know, how much were they selling for? What did they look like in person?
In person. Because, totally different.
Wow. That blew my mind. How different some of the pictures could be versus what you see in person. There were some fun surprises. And so after seeing that, I talked to my husband. I was like, I really think we can list this for higher. Like, I almost wonder if we're not doing ourselves justice. And of course, you know, his concern was, I don't want it to just sit there though. We need to like be competitive. And we talked to a realtor, of course. And literally the morning of going live, she said, I agree. Let's go at 360. We can do this. And she was totally right. So that's another, you know, moment where it was so beneficial to have a really confident and knowledgeable agent. And it made me feel comfortable. My husband was like, I don't know. And so, but it was awesome. We did it. And the proof of how quickly it went under contract really showed us that. And I really believed in our product. So I wanted to do it justice.
Yeah. What did it sell for?
It ended up selling for $360. So full list price. It was a cash offer.
Oh, nice.
And so no appraisal was requested, and, we closed in 2 weeks. So we ended up closing on, April 21st. So it was a really, really quick turnaround. And I didn't even know I would get so attached to my house.
That doesn't go away.
Yeah, it doesn't. Okay. No. That's so funny to hear because yeah, it was like, it was a baby to me. And, even with listing conversation, I was like, you know, you have to check yourself and make sure, are you being prideful because it's your product, or is this really what it's worth? Right. So you have to check yourself. And so I really wanted to make sure I did that. And that's why I made sure to ask my agent. I was like, hey, where are you thinking we're at with this product? Right.
Yeah.
So that's important. And I got so attached. And so when we had a 2 week close, it's funny because my husband was like, yes, this is what we want. And I'm like, wait, hold on. I'm not ready. Hold the fort. I need a minute. And so I think those last 2 weeks, I spent so much time there. And I literally sat on the couch and just took everything in. And I was like, did I get enough pictures? I need to take a picture of the faucets. I need to take it, you know? So I was just like doing all this crazy stuff because I was so in love with it.
Oh, wait, the doorstop. I didn't get that one.
Yeah. That picture.
Yeah, the doorstop.
Yeah. So it was good. I was going to add too that staging is, I mean, it makes such a huge difference.
No brainer.
And I remember you always saying on podcasts and in your modules, just stage. Don't question it, right?
Don't question it.
And it is easy to question it when you get to the end, especially when you've had so many costs. And even our realtor was like, hey, you still want to spend money on staging? And so many people were questioning it. Do you want to spend money on staging? Are you sure? And I mean, I had one little moment of hesitation, but I was like, no, we need to show this house as the home that it is. It's not a house anymore. It's a home. And wow, it makes an incredible difference. And people commented on it. You know, people gave feedback on that. And so it really, I do 100% believe in staging, and I 100% believe that it helped it sell as quickly as it did.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can look at a property staged or unstaged and you feel different. You place more value if it's the same house. Let's say it's the same house and it's staged and it's not staged. You will put more value on a well-staged property. We just do that. Like because we do, all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, this is cozy. Oh my God, I can totally see myself here. But when there's nothing there, it just, I don't care what the market's doing. Like, I've even staged it just for photos, even when the property like sold before I was able to list it. Like, because the photos for my own use, like I want to see it staged because it looks, my stager adds at least $10,000 value. At least $10,000 value.
Yeah.
It looks amazing staged.
I believe that. I totally
it's so
believe
huge.
That. Yeah. And I think it's, if you're not, you know, whether you're staging it yourself or you utilize a stager, I think it's also important to stage it to the feel of the neighborhood and of the home. I felt like, to me, you know, I was very specific on what I wanted. And so I chose a stager that I knew would create the vibe and the feel for that specific house. Because I felt like that's so important when people walk in, they want to feel a certain way and you want the staging to accentuate the features that you put so much money into, right? So some of the beautiful open shelving that we put and some of the tile work that we did and the flooring, I mean, all of that, like the staging really helped that bring it to life and accentuate it and make it look even better.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So you paid $183,500. You had $113,000 in repairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you sold for $360,000. So what does that mean? What was your profit?
So at the end of the day, we ended up making around a little over $17,000 in profit.
Nice. And yeah, nice.
Yeah. And when we calculated kind of what we would have made had we not hit all the road bumps and had an extended timeline, it would have been probably about $38,000. So it definitely showed, it put it into life, the time is money for
me. Yes.
And it was great to see that for myself. I think for this particular project, and I hear a lot of the women saying it, you know, for the first flip, you just want to make money. And so I think that going in with that perspective, or you don't want to lose money. You don't want to lose, right?
Yeah, right.
And I think going into that with that perspective helped a lot. It's like, okay, if we make a dollar, this is a win. And I felt that I was getting paid to learn, essentially, which was really cool. And I looked at it also as an investment, right? Versus income. So for me, it's on this one, right? So, you know, if you look at the average percentage on a stock market, for example, I feel like it's like 6.5% average, right? I know that shifts, right? And on this, when I looked at the money that we put in, we essentially made a 38% return on investment annualized, right? You can't get that anywhere else.
You can't do that.
Our friends that invested with us also made a higher percentage than they would in the stock market. And there's an asset that's protecting, right? And so to me, I felt like it was such a win all around for everyone. And the learning lessons that I got were so valuable. And just the flexibility to do whatever I needed to do with my daughter or whatever it was that was going on in my life, I could do. You know, we had sicknesses. I had tea parties to go with to her at her school. You know, whatever it is, I got to do it and I got to enjoy it and be fully present because I was the boss.
Yes.
So it was all so worth it at the end of the day and so rewarding to see, you know, a 1922 house come back to life. It was so cool to be part of that experience.
Congratulations on that. Really, congrats. That's huge. We say it over and over and over, but there's so much learning that happens in the doing that can't happen any other way. Like you just have to go do.
Yeah.
In some projects, there are more learning lessons than others. Mm-hmm. And then when there aren't learning lessons, we're like, what's wrong? What did I do wrong? Like, well, it shouldn't be this easy. And it's like, no, some kind of are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm so glad y'all are here. Y'all are on this side of it. Cause I know the flooring stuff was super stressful. I know like all of the things that happened were super stressful in the moment. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Kudos to you for hanging in there and getting to this point and making a profit and making your friends money, like all of the things. You did it.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, it was an incredible experience. And I would rather have to have some really hard conversations or take some risks and, you know, have that fear of failing. I would rather have that than to be someone who just had these dreams and watched people do it on Instagram and never pursued it myself and just always wondered what if, because it was really scary to quit my job and to just decide, you know, I'm going to just jump into this. But if there's something that you really believe in that you want to do and you feel passionate about it, just do it. Just jump in and do it. And all of the learning lessons make it so unbelievably worth it. And you can really sit back and just be proud of yourself. And even if it quote unquote, seems like a failure the first time around, like I still would have done it again and just learn and try to do it better because I'm passionate about that. And feeling the hard in other ways that I've felt the hard through other jobs is, it honestly was not as fun as these hard. So I would do it again in a heartbeat and have the same issues that I had again in a heartbeat because it's going to make me better in not just flipping, but just in my personal life. I learned so much about myself. I learned so much about how to have more challenging conversations. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to take risks so that I can follow my dreams. So, yeah.
And ask for help.
And ask for help. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Call in the experts, get second opinions.
Yes. Yep.
That's awesome. So much learning. Oh my gosh. What does your husband think?
It was funny because when we were getting towards the end, especially when the flooring issue came up, I was like, do you want to do this again? Right. And he was like, I don't know. We need to wait. I need to see how this plays out till the end. But he's so supportive and he's so handy. So he did a ton of work, especially towards the end. But yeah, he was a little on the edge there. And even our realtor was like, so you guys think you're going to do this again? I was like, oh yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to like start going.
Let's go.
And so now he's 100%, you know, on board and ready to do this again. So
you just have to ask him at the right time. You pick your moment to ask him.
Yes, exactly. Pick the right moment.
Oh man, I love it. Well, your daughter's probably too young to understand any of it. I think my son was finally like 11 when he finally understood anything about what we were doing at these houses and what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't wait till she does. You know, I know that probably was such a proud moment for you to be able to say, hey, here's what I'm doing and here's what I'm doing for your future. You know, and for me to be able to just tell her that I have faced some fears and I followed some dreams and you can too. Wow. That's more valuable than anything. So I can't wait for that and to show her that she can be brave and she can do hard things and she can do big things, whatever she wants to do. So
I have goosebumps from that, but really that's what she's going to see. That's what you're doing. That's what you're showing her. That's so freaking cool, man. So much bigger than just flipping houses.
Absolutely. So much bigger than that. And it's so rewarding. I am so thankful for this group of women, just hearing all of their stories. It just goes to show you can do this in any season of your life. There are women from all different backgrounds, all different seasons of their life. Some that have a heck of a lot going on. And so the fact that they can do it, that means anyone can do it. It doesn't matter what season you are in your life. And to me, that was so empowering. It just made it so much more worth to see their stories. And now knowing that I can be a part of that too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me. This was such an honor. Thank you.
And I appreciate you being in the group and just engaging and just being a part of it.
All right.
Thanks. Tell your husband hi.
I will.
All right.
Bye.
Be in the group. Bye. Such a great story. Thank you again, Melissa, for sharing it with us. I know it's going to inspire people to get off the sideline, right? To stop watching people on Instagram or Facebook flip houses and think, man, I wish I could do that. Hello, you can. But you have to take the first step, which is take action. You're the only one in your way. You absolutely can do this. You can do it from where you are, from your age, from your financial picture, from wherever you are in the US. It doesn't matter. Start where you are. Just start. And stop comparing yourself to, oh, but I'm not this person on HGTV. Well, good. We're glad you're not this person on HGTV because that person already exists. So just start. You absolutely can do this. We have hundreds of interviews of everyday women doing this thing, chasing this dream. But it all started with one thing. They decided to take action. They decided enough is enough. When are you going to decide to take action instead of complaining that you're not doing the thing you want to be doing? All right. If that thing is flipping houses, whether you want to buy them, renovate them, and sell them, or maybe even buy, renovate, and hold for rentals, maybe some Airbnb properties, what have you. If you want to buy properties and fix them up, that's what we help women do. We do it day in, day out, and we love it. And if you want to be on this journey with us, awesome. Let's see if we're a fit. Go to herfirstflip.com, fill out an application, book a call, and let's see how we can work together. All right. Until next time, go out there, flip houses like a girl, leave people and places better than you find them, and make it a great day. Bye, y'all.